Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, hello, hello. Let's get ready to roll, boys and girls. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Matt Norlander. Hello to everyone dialed in for a live YouTube Friday night. Actually, we are Saturday morning, 12:30 a.m. Eastern. I'm in Boston. Chip Patterson, let's go, buddy. GP is in studio. We are going to recap everything that went down on Friday. We've got a 1 moving on. We've got a 2 moving on. We've got a 4 moving on. We've got an 11. We have an 11 moving on. We will start with that 11 seed there. Just an entertaining night of ball. A couple of curveballs, no doubt about it, but we have an Elite Eight set, folks, and it is on the table. And right off the top, if you are watching live, I'm going to give this to you right now if you are unaware of the tip times. Both games on Sunday that were determined by Friday night's Sweet 16 matchups are going to be on CBS at 2:20 Eastern. Oh, there's a voice crack. Okay, let's have a show, Chip Patterson. We're going to have 1-seed Purdue versus 2-seed Tennessee. That's obviously coming out of the Midwest with Andrew Catalon, Steve Lapis, and Evan Washburn. That's going to be your 2:20 tip on CBS. And then 5:05, the last game to decide the Final Four, emanating from Dallas, Texas on CBS. You know it. Ian Eagle, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, Tracy Wolfson, 4-seed Duke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Say it again. Come on. Just lay it in. Come on. This is on America's most watched network. This is on the network of stars. This is where are these schools from? Tell me again, Matt Norlander. Yeah,
from the Atlantic Coast Conference, the network of DJ Burns. It is ACC. By the way, Chip, feel free. I don't have my board. You can lock in any single sound you want. Let's go. I mean, at any single time. We are going to start right here, right now. Everyone in the live chat, appreciate you. Nada, let's toss a poll question up there, by the way, as well. So let's look at the Final Four right now. How about this one for the poll question, Nada? Drop it in there. We'll say, which lower-seeded team do you give the best chance to win in the Elite Eight? So with that, we've got Illinois, we've got Clemson, we've got Tennessee, and we've got State. Tennessee's going to win that one. So you know what, Nada? Don't put Tennessee in. We'll go Clemson, Illinois, and State, which are the 3 lower-seeded teams there, and then we'll get to those results later. Let's go right now. NC State, we are obviously leading on the darling of this tournament, still sticking around, beating second-seeded Marquette in the first tip of Friday night, 67-58. I've got thoughts. I've got nuggets. I'm not going to go any further. I've talked a ton to start this pod. We are going right to the heart of the celebration in North Carolina. Chip Patterson, thoughts, experiences, give me anything and everything you got on your Wolfpack getting this done and making their first Elite Eight since 1986.
Yeah. What happened when I scared you? Did I jump in and say that? Yes. I said this was the reverse of the curse, right? You know, I said it was done. I said, that's it. Chris Cortiani got called for the travel against Georgetown, And that was the beginning. And this is the end. All right. So, yeah, I was at the Rialto. Shout out to Hayes Permar. You know, old school theater, downtown Raleigh. And you've got that Big Star shirt on. Like, Big Star, right. Big Star might have played at Rialto.
Seriously. That's right, baby.
It was panic. It was anxiety. You know, like, it was waiting for things to go bad. Because that is what has been most of the NC State athletic experience. But listen, I saw with Kevin Keats so much confidence. And that's something that is both equally inspiring and also frustrating. Because you were like, okay, why did it take so long? But at the same time, they are dialed in. Like Casey Morsell dialed in. O'Connell dialed in. Everybody around this team understands their roles. Mo Diarra, who, do you realize, Matt, that they got a little bit hosed because he has to wait another hour to be able to eat?
I'm aware. Yes.
Right. I mean,
Ramadan,
it's just,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The Ramadan fasting going into this, which is, you know, we see it with the NCAA tournament every single year with those who observe, but you know, the fact that NC State, I thought to me, held the upper hand through and through. It was just something that was very, very impressive. Marquette was chasing the game the entire time. And that is not what you expect when you see an 11 against a 2. You know, this is a weekend where we had 1 and 2 in every single bracket. But what did we see last night? The 1 and the 2 did not hold serve. What did we see tonight? The 1 and the 2 mostly held serve, but NC State being the exception.
We have 8 teams left in this tournament. 3 of them originate from the Atlantic Coast Conference: Clemson, Duke. We will get to the Blue Devils, of course, and the NC State Wolfpack. So, yeah, I mentioned 86 the last time NC State broke through this far. Shouts to Vinny Del Negro, Nate McMillan, and Charles Shackelford that were on that team, coached by the one and the only Jim Valvano. It is it's a heck of a story, man. This is awesome stuff. It really is. I mean, Marquette, I'll get to them in a second. I was surprised by the performance, by the lack of urgency. NC State wanted it more from the jump, and they controlled it. They had it. They did. I was genuinely surprised, Chip. I did not think I didn't put it out of my mind that NC State could win the game. But I did not we've had a couple of these bad boys now in the past 48 hours where the team on the wrong end of a result. I give credit to the other team for winning, but I was you would have thought that Marquette played a triple overtime game the day before. It was weird. You'd agree, right?
Oh, without a doubt. The fact that Marquette did not have juice was surprising. But at the same time, when in this tournament, outside of what, second half against Western Kentucky, like maybe first half against Colorado, I don't think Marquette's had its best stuff. I mean, Tyler Kolek came back. So like in terms of a math equation, you would be like, okay, Tyler Kolek's back. Marquette's going to be back to its full self. I would not say that I saw 40 minutes with Tyler Kolek back in the lineup where I thought the Marquette was as good as it was, let's say, on January 10th.
Yeah, it was surprising. And they basically were only able to roll 6 guys out there. Chase Ross came off the bench. Marquette finishes at just 0.84 points per possession, was 4 of 31 from three-point range. 4 of 31. Folks, that's 13% overall. And, you know, Cam Jones gave you 20. Tyler Cole.
That would be GP's little homie from Memphis.
It would be his little homie from Memphis, but booted out of this tournament. Kolek at 17. There was a shot afterward of Kolek walking down the hallway. Jersey ripped in half out of pure frustration. And I get it, man. If you're Marquette fans, you are pissed because this was a good team. You did break through to the second weekend, but you had that 2 next to your name in this bracket. Seed expectation, you get to an Elite Eight, and that has not happened 2 years in a row. It is frustrating. You've got other fan bases that are right there joining with you. But yeah, if you're Tennessee, we'll get to you later. You're the only 2 that's still standing in this field, in this tournament. It is a tough one, and it was a tough night for the Big East. How about NC State, though? Won 4 straight games against ranked opponents. That's the longest streak for the program since 1985 when it won 5 straight. And what's wild is going on this run here, Well, dating back to the win over Louisville in the ACC tournament when it was trailing at the half, and how they have tapped into, in my opinion now with this, no matter what happens again on Sunday against Duke, whether it's a 30-point win, a 1-point buzzer beating victory, or a 30-point loss, the NC State story is guaranteed to be a top five, if not better, defining story of this tournament. Ooh. And the power of it. And this is awesome stuff. It really, really, really is. NC State, Chip, has held its past five opponents under 40% from the field. They haven't done that in 8 seasons, and to do it against NCAA tournament competition is incredible. I mentioned the Marquette shooting display from 3-point range, 4 of 31. It's the second worst, with a minimum of 30 attempts, and that's a ton of attempts, but it's the second worst percentage by a team in the tournament in the history of the event. You got, I don't know what to say, man, other than you just got a really, really incredible performance out of NC State. And the fact that it comes on the 50-year anniversary of these two teams meeting in the 74 National Championship, mm-hmm. there's a lot of really good stuff here. There really is. If you're curious about the worst 3-point shooting performance, by the way, that was Kentucky in 2010. It was 4 of 32, so just barely worse than that. But yeah, just incredibly, incredibly, incredibly impressive by the Wolfpack getting that done, and continuing a trend for Marquette where it is seeded well in the tournament and then losing to worse seeded teams. It's become something of a trope there for them. They were a 2, they lose to NC State this year. They were a 2, they lost to 7 seeded Michigan State last year. In 2022, it was a toss up 9-8 game, whatever. But before that, 2019, they were a 5. They lost to 12 seed Murray State. I was at that game. They were a 3 in 2012. They lost to 7 seed Florida. So it's tough. It's tough living there for Marquette. I still think the program's going to be just fine under Shaka Smart. But special team, Tyler Kolick, second team All-American, couldn't get it done. Any other outstanding thoughts on what you saw go down here on either end of the aisle, Chip?
Yeah, fair or not. The fact that I'm going to think about, you know, Marquette and Illinois, right? You know, Illinois breaks through first Sweet 16 since 2005. What'd you do? Okay, you capitalized. Marquette, Shaka Smart. You had what, 6 straight losses in the round of 64? Was that, or 5 straight in the round of 64, 6 straight losses without advancing to Sweet 16?
Yeah.
Like, and this is what happens? You know, I just feel like for NC State, and I was watching the game, watching the game with a lot of NC State fans, and they were super, extremely superstitious. Like, here, look at me. Extremely superstitious. Like, I had to check in with multiple friends to be like, okay, can I come sit with you during the second half? No, yes, no, yes. You know, you had to balance it all, but there was so much confidence. You were up by 13 at halftime, right? And the whole second half, you're only worried about blowing it. You're not having to beg for a comeback. NC State owned this game.
I credit
Kevin Keats.
Owned it. Yeah, you know what? Let's give Keats his love and that staff. This is
phenomenal.
Ridiculous turnaround for this team, man. Really, like, is.
You had to look at the fact that, okay, all right, you're going to get Tyler Kolick, Oso Iguodaro, the pick and roll game. We're going to try to isolate DJ Burns. You know, we're going to try to create all these mismatches. And yet NC State just answered the bell. And I was so impressed by the Wolfpack with that. We'll get to what happens next in a little bit. But for this game, you know, you spent 7 wins in 12 days. You come back, you get the adulation, you're on campus, everything like is rocking and rolling. And then you show up with another strong performance. One of the great stories of this NCAA tournament, like you mentioned, is the fact that Kevin Keats starts against Louisville and you're like, I don't know what's going to happen at NC State.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to agents. You're talking to agents, you know, like,
I had to, just before the ACC tournament, I had to just check and make a few calls, be like, because I don't know. And it was in the air, and he was safe by the time they even made, you know, the semis, in my opinion. But this is, I texted Brinson, our buddy Will Brinson, shouts to the Pick 6 podcast. I said, lifetime contract for Keats. he was on cloud 9. Credit to Will Brinson.
Wait, hold on. You know I was with him, right?
Oh, he did not indicate. He did not.
Tonight?
Oh, yeah. He did not indicate.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So, first half is, like, still going on during bedtime, right?
Yeah.
So, like, we're trying to get the boys to bed. And then I run up to the theater. Shout out to Hayes Permar, the Rialto, downtown Raleigh. Like, I catch up with Will Brinson, a couple other NC State grads. And that was what I saw, was they were like, I don't think we're supposed to have this. We're not supposed to have nice things, you know? And your Marquette didn't have the goods. Just wild, wild stuff here from the Wolfpack. But, you know, they've got a familiar foe.
They do. We'll get a quick little look ahead on that at the end of the show here. A quick note, though. Mohamed Diarra just going for 15 boards, 11 points. He was the most important player on the floor. DJ Burns going for 4 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. I'm not going to say he was used as a decoy, but.
Well, he's been good at passing out of the double team.
No doubt. No doubt.
Like, that's his thing. I saw one scout send a message that was like, why did it take them so long to realize that he is an elite passer out of the double team? 4 out, 1 in.
Yeah.
But you needed O'Connell to be reliable. You needed Diarra to be reliable. So, you know, I'm not going to slam the coaching staff at that point.
No. It's impressive stuff. NC State fans relish this. A big night. Women's team also advanced. Big night all around for NC State hoops. That's awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. We will just give you a quick little taste of the look ahead later in the show. But first, we got to get to the team that NC State's going to play and what it did, knocking off the top seed right there out of the South. That's obviously Duke. We will get to that right after this message. But first, partners, Nada, after the break, just fire away, interrupt me, go ahead.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I don't love Anderson Cooper as much as GP does, but I do appreciate Anderson Cooper.
Again, if you're listening to the show, there's a thing with Anderson Cooper. Okay, this has become a thing. All right, Duke 54, Houston 51. Mm-hmm. Game was super ugly.
Yep.
Game was marred. This listen, I truly don't care who wins. Doesn't matter to me. I don't like when a team has a first-team All-American go down with an ankle injury in the first half, and we don't get to see both teams at their best. If Jamal Shedd was on the floor, I'm of the opinion Houston probably would have won the game. The fact that it was able to keep it close and kind of ugly it up is a credit to Houston, which in totality has taken on huge injuries. A healthy Houston team could have stood toe-to-toe with UConn as the best team in the country, but top seed, it's out. Get out of here. 2 days in a row, number one seed. Done.
I feel like it's a continuation of the Houston sort of trend, though.
I mean, they did make a Final Four in 21, so yes and no.
The injuries.
Oh, yeah.
You feel like this Houston team, whether it's last season, whether it's this season, like you just you're always just like, oh man, one injury, and Jamal Shedd is a different injury than Juwan Roberts, right? You know, like you've got different levels to this, but this is a group that if you have somebody go down, there's not an obvious answer. I'm not looking at Houston's roster. I'm not looking at the way that Houston plays basketball and thinking, okay, you know, that I automatically know off the top of my head who the player is, who's going to come on and take on more minutes, who's going to take on a bigger role and feel confident at all at they're going to be able to come in and maintain that same standard, and the standard being, you know, five straight Sweet 16s, you know, three out of the last four they've reached the Elite Eight, right?
Somewhere in that realm. They've been a top five team in the country per KenPom, you know, past half decade, basically every season.
I just don't think that with a general depth chart, I'm sorry to use a football term. Is that okay?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. I'll allow it, especially at this hour. Yes.
Yeah. I just don't think in the depth chart that I'm like, okay, yeah, they're good. They're good. They're good. They're good. And so you lose your heartbeat, man. That's what Jamal said. It's like you lose your heartbeat, and you're going to be able to beat a team that, look, in this game, did Duke have the flamethrower? No. But do they have that high end? Yes. 100%. So super disappointing for Houston and for Duke, man. Shout out to my guy, Joe Giglio, who always talks about bracket luck, right? You know,
That's a thing. It's a thing for sure.
It's a thing.
It's part of it.
Bracket luck was a thing when Virginia did not have to face a 1-seed Duke with Zion or a 1-seed North Carolina with
they were all one seeds, so they were in their separate corners. Yes,
none of them got to the Final Four, but Virginia did, and now here's Duke, who has taken out a one seed without its best player and now gets to face an 11 seed in the Elite Eight. You know, it's wow.
It's great
to see the small little guy. You know.
All right. Let's take take it easy. Take it down just a little bit of a notch here. Here's the deal with Shedd. 2 points, 13 minutes. It's a dagger. And they tried to overcome it. They couldn't do it. Cryer had 15 for Houston. Houston as a team matched Duke in shooting percentage, 41% apiece. Turnovers, Duke had 14. Houston only had 10. But the problem was Houston could not function offensively, and it was tough to begin with, but no point guard on the floor. You've got a first team All-American. We're going to vote on these awards on Monday. Jamal Shedd will be a first team All-American for me, and I expect he'll be a CBS Sports first team All-American. He deserves it. It's a tough break. It really is, but Houston did its best to try and get this game into the mud. What did we get? We got some timely buckets from Filipowski. He had 16 points in this game. You had a couple of nice – this is the thing. I said this, I think, on the CBS Sports Network show with GP. Jeremy Roach had 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, played 38 minutes. The only player that played all 40 was McCain, by the way, and he had 7 points. He didn't come up big in this one. But I thought that Roach was going to need to be that prototypical senior Duke guard, big shots, big moments. He was. Duke just had enough here and there. It just It just had enough to slip past. And credit to Shire. Year two right now, what's he done? Year one, wins the ACC, undefeated at home, gets a tournament win. Year two, doesn't win the ACC, but you break through to the Elite Eight. And here are your overall stats on Duke. I got a couple of doozies here for you, Chip. And credit to our CBS Sports research team for helping out with some of this stuff here.
Oh, you got the doc open. I don't have the doc open. Hit me with it. Let's go.
All right. How about this one? All right, Duke's in his 25th Elite Eight appearance. That's the third most of all time. What happened on Friday? Duke beat a better seeded team for the first time since 94. 94 was the last time Duke faced a better seeded team.
Shout out to Cherokee Parks.
There we go.
Yeah, on the 94 team.
There had only been six instances where Duke was facing even a better seeded team in the bracket. So some context on that as well. And they overcome, only 23 points in the first half. All of Roach's 14, by the way, were in the second half. It's the 10th win for Duke against a one seed. No program has more victories over a one ever. And John Shire, 54-17 through two seasons. Really, really, really impressive start. Credit to Duke, man. It's going to be, from a national standpoint, what's going to be interesting is that game, which will be the last game to decide the Final Four. It will be the entire country versus Duke fans. That is going to stoke something. And I'll take either team. Give me NC State in the Final Four, absolutely. And then Duke, you think I'm ever going to object to Duke being a team to cover in the national semifinals? Of course not. But I think NC State versus Duke on an Elite Eight stage, Chip. And let's just quickly preview this, and then we'll get to the other results of the night. But let's give it a look ahead here since we've talked about these two teams off the top. Carolina versus Duke was an awesome thing in the Final Four 2 years ago. But what it did not provide, in my opinion, was some nostalgia stokes of making Duke the ultimate enemy. There was some of it, don't get me wrong. But here, when you've got another ACC team that's associated with one of the most charmed runs in the history of this beautiful event, and it's got two digits next to its name, and Duke's on the other side, and this isn't a vintage great two team, agree or disagree that one, this game is going to do a monster rating. This will do this game, and I don't really care too much about ratings. You can tell me seven people watch the tournament or 7 billion. I'm going to love it all the same. I do think that this NC State Duke game is going to, if you are listening to the podcast and you're a diehard College Hoops fan, awesome. But if you've got some buddies who aren't going to listen to a College Hoops podcast, some gal pals who aren't going to listen to a College Hoops podcast, but they kind of get into the tournament, this will be the game that gets them emotionally invested if they have even an inkling of an indication or an inclination to root against Duke. Agree? Yeah, Duke versus World Sunday, CBS?
Yeah, let me get my hand on the motor right here. Just... it's not there. Yeah.
That's right, baby. That's
right. All right, so I think that this is going to be the moment that it goes sour for NC State. And we're going to have, there are going to be opportunities for everybody to speak. But the fact that Duke was one and done in the ACC tournament at the hands of NC State.
That is correct.
Is impactful to me. It is impactful to John Shire, to Chris Carwell, to the rest of that Duke staff. And I think it's impactful to Jeremy Roach, to Kyle Filipowski, to Tyrese Proctor, to even Jared McCain with his less than one calendar year of experience suiting up, you get me. I think that this is going to be a spot where Duke is probably enjoying the opportunity to get another lick at the Wolfpack, if that makes sense.
It does. Going to be an incredible game. ACC in this tournament, by the way. Now, if you've lost track of the record, Atlantic Coast Conference having itself quite the march here. 11-2 in the tournament. 11-2, and the fact that it's
We talked about this? Ooh, I haven't gotten a chance to spit this at you.
Go ahead. Let's go.
I mean, I guess have you received a lot of different opinions on this?
What about the ACC in general?
Or why they do well in the tournament?
I'll offer it up here. Let's hear what you got, bud.
Okay. All right. Two things on two levels. Number one, I do think it is a league that, if I am to paint with a broad brush, is not as defensively minded as the Big 12 or the Big East.
Fair.
And efficiency numbers, as we have seen, whether it's in KenPom or whether it's in the net ratings, are always going to reward defensive efficiency. Well,
yes, but it's also, I mean, it's going to bake in both. I mean, Houston was more defensive oriented and it was the number one rated team in the country this season until the Big East tournament when UConn took it over.
Yeah, but Virginia showed up and got the pants dropped.
Correct.
Pantsed, you know, we've already litigated that one. You
right.
Know.
Right.
Number two, and this one came from Josh Pastner, who was actually talking with our friends Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio. He was like, it's a little bit more of a pro style league. You know, like it's a up and down, you know, it's kind of it's a free flowing league. And guess what? You know what the NCAA tournament needs? Bucket getters. And you know what the ACC has? Bucket getters. So whether it's a 5 seed Miami, right? Oh, you're a 5. But guess what? You've got bucket getters. Whether it's an 8 seed North Carolina back in 2022, guess what you've got? Bucket getters. So I think that the ACC, because they've got diversity of style within the conference, because it is a little bit less of a, you know, sit down, grind it out, you know, hard hitting possession by possession conference. When you get into that one and done single elimination tournament situation, having that free flowing style probably helps you. So again, it is not a huge, awesome thought. But my opinion in the ACC disconnect between your rating, both in terms of KenPom, both in terms of the net, versus how you perform in the tournament, has to do with the fact that the ACC, at least in the last 5, 6, 7 years, has been a league where, not outside of Virginia, not like a elite defensive conference, not a you know, bite your kneecaps, Dan Campbell kind of conference. But at the same time, you know, you've got teams like Pitt, right? Like for example, yeah, hey, you shouted out Pitt. I was happy to hear you say that, right?
Yes.
What was it?
Yeah, it was couple shows.
Yes. Top 4 since March 1st.
Top 10 since March 1 in Torvik. That's right, yeah. Bud. All the way.
Yeah, and what does Pitt have? Hoopers.
Bucket. Well, yeah, we're not okay. Listen, Chip is an ACC country. I gave you 3 minutes. We are congrats to the ACC. It deserves all of its love. 3 of the 8 standings.
Do you agree with the thought that stylistically it is not as efficient? But it's a free-flowing game, and in the tournament, that kind of stuff can be super, super helpful.
Yeah, no, it definitely can. And Duke and NC State got to this spot in different ways. They will meet in Dallas on Sunday for the Elite Eight. Let's go to the bottom half, Midwest Regional semifinals. Let's talk those games. We're going to start with Tennessee versus Creighton here. Tennessee wins 82-75. It at one point went on an 18-0 run in this game and really flipped it. Creighton had a good push back here. Dalton Kennett goes for 24. He was the standout, as he has been often, but credit to Zakai Ziegler, 18 points, 6 dimes, and you had Josiah Jordan James go for 17. Creighton had a little bit of something from the usual suspects here. Baylor Shireman with 25, Stephen Ashworth with 16, Ryan Kalkbrenner with 14, Trey Alexander, who was he was cold to start. I mean, he had a couple buckets here at the end that helped that stat line, but he was not as good as they needed him to be here. So the Big East goes 0-2 here, and UConn's the only team left standing from that conference. Creighton can't break through. It was an Elite Eight team a season ago, Sweet 16 team here. Tennessee gets it done, wins ugly. Despite getting to 82 points, Tennessee did win this game. Did win this game ugly here. Only had 4 turnovers, which is no surprise. Creighton does not turn teams over. It cannot afford to not turn teams over and then not take advantage, excuse me, on the glass. But that's what we had here. Thoughts on Vols versus Blue Jays. Obviously, I know your attention was also focused on what was going down with Duke and Houston, but some reaction, Mr. Patterson, on Tennessee breaking through to the Elite Eight for the second time and on the brink of its first Final Four in program history.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Trey Alexander part, because I thought that I was eating my words on the birds when it came to Creighton, because all season long on the Early Edge, which obviously CBS Sports Podcast Family and Networks, you know, I was talking about Creighton as though a team that was better on paper than it was in performance. That if you looked at the scouting report of Trey Alexander, of Baylor Shireman, of Stephen Ashworth, of Ryan Kalkbrenner, like, you were like, why is this team not winning every single game? Or when it's winning, why is it not winning by more? And I kind of felt like Trey Alexander has been a little bit of a disappointment this season. You know, he goes through the NBA draft process last year, comes back, and then in this spot for him to go 3-for-12 from the field, 13 points. Like, yes, you know, there are other things that he's able to contribute, 7 rebounds, one steal. Like, I just think that this Creighton team, it's not that they poured it out against Oregon, but they had to dig really, really deep against Oregon. And I was sitting there in the CBS Sports HQ studios in Stanford. We're getting piped in all of the post-game press conferences, all the comments. And you hear them talk about that one-point loss to San Diego State and how when they were in the huddle and they were talking in, you know, into regulation, into first overtime, in the second overtime, they were like, we did not come back. We did not pull this team back together to lose like this. I mean, hey, Matt, you tell me, like, did they pour it out? Was that their best performance? Like, did they have to dig deep and find some of their best stuff? Because clearly, like, we saw, what, 4 games during the regular season where all of a sudden they were like, whoa. On shout out to Bart Torvik, like, some 99s out there, you know, like, yeah, some 99 game scores out there. But I didn't see that all season. Not regularly, not consistently.
I'd say on balance, Creighton gave us, maybe it came a little bit shy of its total potential, but I thought it did a pretty good job here. This was obviously a tough opponent. And I'm seeing in the chat here a couple of people saying Tennessee didn't even play its best game. That's correct. I mean, but the run really flipped it. That was key, and it was a burst.
Sure, yeah. I do not feel like this was Tennessee's best game. I do feel like if I'm gonna have to do this, and like if you and GP do a lot of this during the regular season, because heck yes, I am a listener, you know, all season long. But we like if you're gonna be given the credit and the blame, I think I'm going more like, man, Creighton. Yeah, I don't think Tennessee played well enough that Creighton at a medium game could not have won this.
Yeah, there might be something to that. If you're a Creighton fan, it is a stinger, because you knew the draw was tough. I picked Creighton to come out of the region. My only Final Four team standing is UConn. I had Houston getting there. I had St. Mary's. Let's not even talk about that. And I had Creighton. They couldn't push it on through here. Just a couple of tough spots and tough shots down the stretch. Kalkbrenner had like an offhanded lefty that just didn't seem like the right shot in a big moment, where if they had gotten two more, maybe you make it a little bit tighter. Maybe it gets a little bit more in doubt. But hey, Creighton, a nice run here as of late. And now we wait and see on just how much roster turnover they'll have. It's an intriguing spot. Greg McDermott recently signed a new deal, a new contract, and we'll see if that program can remain in the top 20 conversation overall. Tennessee fans, I know you've been waiting for a moment like this. You're going to get Purdue. We'll get to the Boilers in just a second here. Have a team on the top two line, Vols, living up to seed expectation, getting it done. Dalton Connect had a couple of bang-bangs and really made sure Tennessee got it done. Really good stuff. And that, friends, is our only chalk matchup in the Elite Eight. So let's transition right now, buddy, and let's talk Purdue over Gonzaga. The least compelling game and result of the evening, one seed of Purdue gets past number 5 Gonzaga, 80-68. on the Zags end, a ninth straight Sweet 16 ends here. There's no shame in it. It's a good season for Gonzaga. It did better from a seed perspective, I think, overall than anyone thought. It is now 0-3 versus Purdue in the past two seasons. On the Zags end here, you got good contributions out of Nembhard. I thought he had a relatively decent game. I thought Graham Ike played well. Graham Ike dropping a couple of triples there was certainly a surprise.
Yeah, Anton Watson. That made the stat line look a little bit better for Ike too.
Correct. Anton Watson, his career comes to an end with a valiant effort, an overmatched effort. He fouled out. Ike fouled out. Gonzaga just didn't have enough. Purdue eventually pulled away. I got a few nuggets here. Shouts to Chris Foreman, also listening to the pod. Here's what he sent along. Just a couple of them. Purdue is now 5-0 all time against Gonzaga. It's won its first three tournament games by 79 points, which is obviously outrageously good. And good on Purdue for not making any doubt about it when it comes to this stuff. It continues to play especially well. And then Zach Edey, 26.7 points, 16.3 rebounds on 67% field goal shooting in this tournament. He's the first player to average better than 25 and 15 through three games in the tournament since Larry Keenan at Memphis in 73, folks. Okay, and he's the only player to average 25 and 15 on better than 65% shooting through three games in the tournament since they started tracking this, and the data goes back to 60. Edey just reinforcing his legendary status. Purdue, Tennessee, couple of fan bases. Pressure was on your coaches. Pressure was on your teams. One of you is guaranteed to wash a lot of the stink off and get to the Final Four. And for the other one, frankly, obviously more is on Purdue to get that done than Tennessee. It's going to set up a heck of a matchup there. I remain impressed by Purdue. It's almost a little quiet, Chip. It's almost a little quiet in how they were able to, swat away Grambling State. And then just totally eviscerate Utah State. And then Gonzaga tried to make it – like, it was interesting for the first half, but after that we didn't have that much whatsoever. And they've, in somewhat boring fashion, been able to push on through and make an Elite Eight. Any quickie thoughts from you on what the Boilermakers have done?
Yeah, I understand it's quiet because you've been in your silo, you've been breaking coaching news, but I've been standing with a megaphone since they asked me to re-rank the Sweet 16, saying that Purdue was the most impressive team from the first weekend. I got you. Like, UConn is still UConn. They still hold their position. But that in terms of the way that I was feeling about the Boilermakers after the Big Ten tournament versus the way that I was feeling about the Boilermakers when they eviscerated the regular season champions from the Mountain West Conference, I was like, I don't know. And look, I've got Tom Fornelli in my ear. Like, all
get him out.
Every day. So... Am I going to be a little bit of a doubter and a little bit of a hater? Yes, that is my bias. Okay. My number one bias is I want to be right about me. As I've told you before, I want my opinions to be right. I want my picks to be right. Yada, yada, yada. But hearing Tom Fornelli, I'm like, oh, okay. Doubt Purdue. But, I come into this tournament and then I see the way that this team handles their business. I see the way that the guards that were young a year ago are grown up. I see the way that the portal additions have hit. I see the way that a team that was like very middle of the pack turns into one of the best three-point shooting teams in the entire country. I think it is unfair for us to apply the old standard. And I was actually talking to a family friend. His father is a Purdue alum, and he says that even he is in a position right now where he's like, I just check the game tracker till halftime. I can't handle it. But you know what I don't have is those scars.
Yeah.
Right. I don't have those disappointment scars. I don't have the Carson Edwards is going nuts. And then all of a sudden, we get the bounce from the free throw and then it gets thrown back and then like put in by Virginia. I don't have that. So I don't have that emotional factor. I see a team that is humming right now. And I am so impressed with the way that they handled their business in the first weekend. The fact that Gonzaga was so trendy, right? I don't know if you check Sportsline. I'm a Sportsline contributor. You know, I'm on the early edge on Fridays and Saturdays here in March Madness. But like a lot of really sharp people were on Gonzaga. And they were like, yeah, here we go. Come on. This is when we get them. Purdue just handled its business. It's different. It's different right now. So
yeah, it is. They're rolling, and now they get Tennessee. Let's do a quick. Don't want to keep people too long here. Quick look ahead. Purdue, Tennessee, that is a rematch, folks. These teams played in Maui. Okay, they played.
Just like Purdue and Gonzaga played.
It was. And this was the semi. Purdue won 71-67. If you're curious, Connect had 16 in that game. Jordan Ganey had 15 off the bench. No one else had double figures. Fletcher Lawyer, not Zach Edey, was your leading scorer in that game. And I wonder if Fletcher Lawyer was the leading scorer for Purdue in a single other game the entire season. I'm going to guess no. If anyone in the live chat wants to fact check me in real time or in the comments if you're watching afterward, I'm going to say that was the only game Lawyer led Purdue in scoring, but I can't reel that off the top of my head. Edey went for 23 points and 10 boards. Purdue got the win there. 1-2. Excellent. I mean, what a great undercard that is for Sunday on CBS. 60 seconds are left. Chip Patterson, lay out the matchup for me.
Tennessee doesn't have the size. Purdue's going to the Final Four. Matt Painter finally getting over the hump. Boilermakers' first Final Four since 1980. I love it. Our friend Hakeem Dermish called it the Prove It region on Selection Sunday. And what is more prove it than Purdue and Tennessee playing for a spot in the Final Four? I think the Boilermakers get it done.
Just an outstanding. I mean, love a great Elite Eight situation here.
Right? I mean, I like your out of nowhere situations, but I am a traditionalist. Like, give me the heavyweight fights here.
Well, no, we got a little something across the board here, and we'll wrap the pod by quickly hitting on all four of these. Because what you get in the Elite Eight is you get your standalone game, you get your final games of the season, basketball games, basketball arena. Everyone tunes in to one game.
Oh, yeah, not a football stadium. Great call.
Not a football stadium. Just there's something about an elite game that just truly it pulls us in, right? And so we've got Duke and NC State. We've got the charmed situation with NC State and you know, the power conference sleeper. That's awesome. You've got the 1-2. You've got the chalk matchup and a fan base that will just be cleansed by merely making the Final Four. And then quickly, let's look ahead to Saturday here. We'll start with the place that I am not at. We'll go Clemson, Alabama. You've even got in this one, you've got the football matchup on a basketball court. And then obviously you've got the behemoth. That's UConn. We'll save UConn for last here. 60 seconds or less. Clemson versus Alabama. Well, actually, real quick, Clemson versus Alabama. If the football teams played 2 weeks from right now, I honestly don't. Is Bama favored? Who's winning that game, in your opinion, on the football field?
Bama is favored. I would take Clemson. And actually, we on the Cover 3 podcast, we did the bracket. If it was college football teams, and you'll like this, through 27 games, 20 of them were right for the football teams.
That's good stuff right there.
I inserted it in the Cover 3 bracket challenge. My entry is the one we did live on air. Of like, you know, just football teams. Yes. And last night, Danny Cannell, Bud Elliott, everybody chiming in, like Clemson and Alabama, like football bracket lives. Cause we had Clemson and Alabama in the Elite Eight, you know, like that was what we had in the football bracket. So lots
all right.
of points there.
Quickie look ahead here. Clemson as the 6, Bama as the 4. Who gets it done? What are you looking for in this game, particularly, Chip?
I think Alabama poured it out. I would take Clemson. I know they're about 2.5-point favorites. Dude, that was everything. I mean, the waves and the way that North Carolina and Alabama both threw haymakers at each other. Do you think they can reload the musket? And I say reload the musket, I use the term musket intentionally because I'm talking about like, you know, the full Revolutionary War. It takes that long to be able to put it back. And you've also got the injury issues that Alabama's been dealing with all across the board. I don't know, man. Pringle was laboring. Shout out to him, you know, for the way he was able to power through. But this is a Clemson team that's playing with a lot of confidence right now.
couple of coaches here, obviously, that haven't made the Final Four. One of them is going to break through and get there. That's also the case with, obviously, NC State and Duke. Shire's never been there as a head coach. Keep in mind, every tournament since 2013, a five or worse has made the Final Four every tournament since 2013. So if that's to continue, either State or Clemson needs to win. Alabama's offense is unreal. And
but did they look that impressive against North Carolina?
I thought the coaching job was really impressive against UNC.
Overwhelm the Tar Heels though.
No, but they were able to get it done. And this is a top five offense. They're just as effective, if not more so, inside the 3-point arc. Oh, by the way, because they can get some buckets near the 10. That's our that's your second tip on Saturday night coming out of LA. Should be a very interesting one. Mark Sears and his battle now with yet another good point guard, Chase Hunter, and how they match up, and then PJ Hall being the potential difference maker in this game. That's some tasty stuff. And yeah, football on the hardwood. I love that. Let's go quickly. UConn versus Illinois. This is where I am. I'm in Boston. Shout out to the TV makers here. Guster plays an album release show Saturday night, about 10 minutes from where the TD Garden is. If I can get done my writing and my HQ stuff.
No.
I'm not going to get there for the start of the show, but I'm hoping to get there for about the final seven or eight songs of the set list. It's a really fun, really, really awesome thing. If it was the second tip, I wouldn't have a chance, but I'll try and meet up with the fellas there. It's kismet, man. That's really, really awesome. As for the stuff on the floor here, Chip, top seed of UConn. I'm going to repeat what I wrote overnight after the game, after seeing what UConn did and what Illinois did. I desperately want a competitive game. I want UConn to be pushed. I asked Hurley about it earlier in the day today on Friday on off-day media availability, if he had any kind of concern, if there was anything that basically his staff could do. UConn's had some close games, don't get me wrong, but it is not conditioned. It's really, really easy for them to win really, really easy. And if he has concerns about if you're in a one-possession game with 90 seconds to go and how the team might react, I want to see UConn in that spot. I want to see a really, really good game. I'm not going to predict it to happen. I need to see someone actually push UConn to the brink before I predict for it to happen. Has not happened so far, so I'm going to go with that again. It's a behemoth. It's a beast. It's so far ahead of everyone else in this bracket, in this tournament, in this sport right now. So I will take UConn to win and UConn to win big. What are you looking for? And, what intrigues you most about Huskies versus Illini?
Well, Matt, I think we suck in close games. You know, like.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he said. So, yeah, we got to do the opposite.
No, this it is bananas. The fact that UConn has been able to not only match the record of double-digit NCAA tournament wins in consecutive order, which would be six, which is something they did last year on the way to the NCAA tournament. But now they've extended that to nine, and I do not think it's crazy to think they're going to double it up.
Whew. Yeah, my column's got a whole bunch of stats on what they're doing. Historically, UConn, this tournament dating back to last, and as a reigning champ, it's...
I just think we're dealing with something different.
Yes.
It was so funny. Have you done any hits with shout out to Katie Mox? Katie Mox on CBS Sports HQ. Yeah. So we were sitting in Stanford. We were in one of the green rooms. We're about to go on and do one of our segments. And she was like, "Oh, so like, who do you have to win it all?" I said, "Well, I took UConn with the greatest boost I could get, like any red-blooded American, because it's just like it's yeah." UConn feels like the national champion, and you get the best price that you can possibly get before the tournament, because that is not going to be the price every single round that you continue to advance.
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah.
And I've seen nothing from the Huskies that has changed my opinion on that one. So,
yep. Here's why I come down on all this. UConn's final result will be the defining story of the tournament, because either it's going to win the NCAA title, and that will be its final result.
Or fall short, and that defines the season.
Or it will fall short, and the way that it falls short will knock us all back and be something that's basically the second most memorable event of the tournament to the actual national champion there.
I agree.
Let's see if we can get it. Illinois plays a different – they're both top two offenses in the country. I can't wait for this game. And this, I just,
buddy, you dropped 1-8 against top two seeds.
That's Illinois. Illinois is 1-8 all time against top two seeds. And UConn's margin is just, it's ridiculous.
So was Arizona a 4 in the Elite Eight comeback in 05? The lone win was an 89 in the Elite Eight. It was one thing that, like, I was like, man, because you always look back at the 05 run.
It was a stat that our folks sent along here. 05 tourney. I'm looking it up here, right here, bud. When they played, Arizona was a 3. Yep. Arizona was a 3. Not a top two seed. That's why 90-89 classic game down there at DePaul. Poll results, by the way. Which non-Tennessee lower-seeded team do you give the best chance at making through to the Final Four? NC State is leading 41%. Clemson, not that far behind, 35%. Illinois, the best team of the group per all the ratings and metrics, 24% against UConn. It will be interesting. And folks,
that's give me Clemson. Clemson,
more than 50 minutes. I want to give a shout out to Chip Patterson. He has been grinding. He's subscribed to Cover 3, primarily a college football guy. He comes in. He moonlights for us with College Hoops coverage every year. You are a stud for this, Chip. I appreciate you, bud, so much. Thank you for hopping on and making it a late night and giving us a good recap. If you enjoyed this, hit the like button. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We still got plenty more coming. Season's not over yet, folks. To everyone who jumped in the live chat here late on a Friday night going to Saturday, we appreciate you. I'm Matt Norlander. That's Chip Patterson. We will be back again with a reaction show. You'll get another one coming to you late Saturday night. That'll be GP, and I believe Kyle Boone, that'll be coming to you. And then I'll be there for you, I believe, on Sunday. So thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you again in less than 24 hours. Let's go have a great Elite Eight.
Oh, no, come on.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby Antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.